Dune by Frank Herbert, continued. The Harkonnens relied on turnover from off-planet for some of their key personnel. We don't dare. Each new lot would have its quota of provocateurs.
Then we'll have to be content with far less profit and a reduced harvest, Howard said. Our output the first two seasons should be down a third from the Harkonnen average.
There it is, the Duke said. Exactly as we expected. We'll have to move fast with the Fremen. I'd like 5 full battalions of Fremen troops before the first Chome audit.
That's not much time, sire, Howard said.
We don't have much time, as you well know. They'll be here with Sardaukar disguised as Harkonnens at the first opportunity. How many do you think they'll ship in, Thufir?
4 or 5 battalions, all told, sire. No more, guild troop transport costs being what they are.
Then 5 battalions of Fremen plus our own forces ought to do it. Let us have a few captive Sardaukar to parade in front of the Landsraad Council, and matters will be much different, profits or no profits.
We'll do our best, sire.
Paul looked at his father, back to Howitt, suddenly conscious of the Mentat's great age, aware that the old man had served 3 generations of Atreides. Aged. It showed in the roomy shine of brown eyes, in the cheeks cracked and burned by exotic weathers, in the rounded curve of the shoulders, and the thin set of his lips with the cranberry-colored stain of Sappho juice.
So much depends on one aged man, Paul thought.
We're presently in a war of assassins, the Duke said. But it has not achieved full scale. Thufir, what's the condition of the Harkonnen machine here?
We've eliminated 259 of their key people, my lord. No more than 3 Harkonnen cells remain, perhaps 100 people in all.
These Harkonnen creatures you eliminated, the Duke said. Were they propertied?
Most were well situated, my lord, in the entrepreneur class.
I want you to forge certificates of allegiance over the signatures of each of them, the Duke said. File copies with the judge of the change. We'll take the legal position that they stayed under false allegiance. Confiscate their property, take everything, turn out their families, strip them. And make sure the crown gets its 10%. It must be entirely legal.
Thufir smiled, revealing red-stained teeth beneath the carmine lips.
A move worthy of your grandsire, my lord. It shames me I didn't think of it first.
Halleck frowned across the table, surprised a deep scowl on Paul's face. The others were smiling and nodding.
It's wrong, Paul thought. This'll only make the others fight all the harder. They have nothing to gain by surrendering.
He knew the actual no-holds-barred convention that ruled in Canley, but this was the sort of move that could destroy them even as it gave them victory.
I have been a stranger in a strange land, Halleck quoted.
Paul stared at him, recognizing the quotation from the O.C. Bible, wondering,
"Does Gurney, too, wish an end to devious plots?"
The Duke glanced at the darkness out the windows, looked back at Halleck.
"Gurney, how many of those sand workers did you persuade to stay with us?"
286 in all, sire. I think we should take them and consider ourselves lucky. They're all in useful categories.
No more?
The Duke pursed his lips, then,
"Well, pass the word along to—"
A disturbance at the door interrupted him. Duncan Idaho came through the guard there, hurried down the length of the table, and bent over the Duke's ear. Leto waved him back, said,
"Speak out, Duncan. You can see this is strategy, staff."
Paul studied Idaho, marking the feline movements, the swiftness of reflex that made him such a difficult weapons teacher to emulate. Idaho's dark, round face turned toward Paul, the cave-sitter eyes giving no hint of recognition. But Paul recognized the mask of serenity over excitement. Idaho looked down the length of the table, said,
"We've taken a force of Harkonnen mercenaries, disguised as Fremen. The Fremen themselves sent us a courier to warn of the false band. In the attack, however, we found the Harkonnens had waylaid the Fremen courier, badly wounded him. We were bringing him here for treatment by our medics when he died. I'd seen how badly off the man was, and stopped to do what I could. I surprised him in the attempt to throw something away."
Idaho glanced down at Leto.
"A knife, my lord. A knife the like of which you've never seen."
"Chris knife?"
someone asked.
"No doubt of it," Idaho said. "Milky white and glowing with a light of its own like."
He reached into his tunic, brought out a sheath with a black ridged handle protruding from it.
"Keep that blade in its sheath."
The voice came from the open door at the end of the room. a vibrant and penetrating voice that brought them all up, staring. A tall, robed figure stood in the door, barred by the crossed swords of the guard. A light tan robe completely enveloped the man, except for a gap in the hood and black veil that exposed eyes of total blue. No white in them at all.
"Let him enter," Idaho whispered.
"Pass that man," the Duke said.
The guards hesitated, then lowered their swords. The man swept into the room, stood across from the Duke.
"This is Stilgar, chief of the Siege I visited, leader of those who warned us of the false band," Idaho said.
"Welcome, sir," Leto said. "And why shouldn't we unsheath this blade?"
Stilgar glanced at Idaho, said,
"You observe the customs of cleanliness and honor among us. I would permit you to see the blade of the man you befriended."
His gaze swept the others in the room.
"But I do not know these others. Would you have them defile an honorable weapon?"
"I am the Duke Leto," the Duke said. "Would you permit me to see this blade?"
"I'll permit you to earn the right to unsheath it," Stilgar said,
and as a mutter of protest sounded around the table, he raised a thin, darkly veined hand.
"I remind you, this is the blade of one who befriended you."
In the waiting silence, Paul studied the man, sensing the aura of power that radiated from him. He was a leader, a Fremen leader. A man near the center of the table across from Paul muttered,
"Who's he to tell us what rights we have on Arrakis?"
"It is said that the Duke Leto Atreides rules with the consent of the governed," the Fremen said. "Thus I must tell you the way it is with us. A certain responsibility falls on those who have seen a Kristknife."
He passed a dark glance across Idaho.
"They are ours. They may never leave Arrakis without our consent."
Halleck and several of the others started to rise, angry expressions on their faces. Halleck said,
"The Duke Leto determines whether—"
"One moment, please,"
Leto said, and the very mildness of his voice held them.
This must not get out of hand, he thought.
He addressed himself to the Fremen.
"Sir, I honor and respect the personal dignity of any man who respects my dignity. I am indeed indebted to you, and I always pay my debts. If it is your custom that this knife remain sheathed here, then it is so ordered, by me. And if there is any other way we may honor the man who died in our service, you have but to name it."
The Fremen stared at the Duke, then slowly pulled aside his veil, revealing a thin nose and full-lipped mouth and a glistening black beard. Deliberately, he bent over the end of the table, spat on its polished surface. As the men around the table started to surge to their feet, Idaho's voice boomed across the room,
"Hold!"
Into the sudden charged stillness, Idaho said,
"We thank you, Stilgar, for the gift of your body's moisture. We accept it in the spirit with which it is given."
And Idaho spat on the table in front of the Duke. Aside to the Duke, he said,
"Remember how precious water is here, sire. That was a token of respect."
Leto sank back into his own chair, caught Paul's eye, a rueful grin on his son's face, sensed the slow relaxation of tension around the table as understanding came to his men. The Fremen looked at Idaho, said,
"You measured well in my siege, Duncan Idaho. Is there a bond on your allegiance to your Duke?" "He is asking me to enlist with him, sire," Idaho said.
"Would he accept a dual allegiance?" Leto asked.
"You wish me to go with him, sire?"
"I wish you to make your own decision in the matter," Leto said,
and he could not keep the urgency out of his voice. Idaho studied the Fremen.
"Would you have me under these conditions, Stilgar? There'd be times when I'd have to return to serve my Duke."
"You fight well, and you did your best for our friend," Stilgar said.
He looked at Leto.
"Let it be thus. The man Idaho keeps the Kristknife he holds as a mark of his allegiance to us. He must be cleansed, of course, and the rites observed, but this can be done. He will be Fremen and soldier of the Atreides. There is precedent for this. Liet serves two masters."
"Duncan?" Leto asked.
"I understand, sire," Idaho said.
"It is agreed, then," Leto said. "Your water is ours, Duncan Idaho," Stilgar said. "The body of our friend remains with your Duke. His water is Atreides' water. It is a bond between us."
Leto sighed, glanced at Howitt, catching the old Mentat's eye. Howitt nodded, his expression pleased.
"I will await below," Stilgar said, "while Idaho makes farewell with his friends. Turok was the name of our dead friend.
Remember that when it comes time to release his spirit. You are friends of Turok."
Stilgar started to turn away.
"Will you not stay a while?" Leto asked.
The Fremen turned back, whipping his veil into place with a casual gesture, adjusting something beneath it. Paul glimpsed what looked like a thin tube before the veil settled into place.
"Is there reason to stay?" the Fremen asked. "We would honor you," the Duke said. "Honor requires that I be elsewhere soon," the Fremen said.
He shot another glance at Idaho, whirled, and strode out past the door guards.
"If the other Fremen match him, we'll serve each other well," Leto said.
Idaho spoke in a dry voice.
"He's a fair sample, sire."
"You understand what you're to do, Duncan?"
"I'm your ambassador to the Fremen, sire."
"Much depends on you, Duncan. We're going to need at least 5 battalions of those people before the Sardaukar descend on us."
"This is going to take some doing, sire. The Fremen are a pretty independent bunch."
Idaho hesitated, then,
"And, sire, there's one other thing. One of the mercenaries we knocked over was trying to get this blade from our dead Fremen friend. The mercenary says there's a Harkonnen reward of 1,000,000 solaris for anyone who'll bring in a single kris knife."
Leto's chin came up in a movement of obvious surprise.
"Why do they want one of those blades so badly?"
"The knife is ground from a sandworm's tooth. It's the mark of the Fremen, sire. With it, a blue-eyed man could penetrate any siege in the land. They'd question me unless I were known. I don't look Fremen, but..."
"Piter de Vries," the Duke said.
"A man of devilish cunning, my lord," Howitt said.
Idaho slipped the sheathed knife beneath his tunic.
"Guard that knife," the Duke said.
"I understand, my lord."
He patted the transceiver on his belt kit.
"I'll report soon as possible. Thufir has my call code. Use battle language."
He saluted, spun about, and hurried after the Fremen. They heard his footsteps drumming down the corridor. A look of understanding passed between Leto and Howitt. They smiled.
"We've much to do, sire," Halleck said.
"And I keep you from your work," Leto said.
"I have the report on the advance bases," Howitt said. "Shall I give it another time, sire?"
"Will it take long?"
"Not for a briefing. It's said among the Fremen that there were more than 200 of these advance bases built here on Arrakis during the Desert Botanical Testing Station period. All supposedly have been abandoned, but there are reports they were sealed off before being abandoned."
"Equipment in them?" the Duke asked.
"According to the reports I have from Duncan."
"Where are they located?" Halleck asked.
"The answer to that question," Howitt said, "is invariably, Liet knows."
"God knows," Leto muttered.
"Perhaps not, sire," Howitt said. "You heard this Stilgar use the name. Could he have been referring to a real person?"
"Serving 2 masters, Halleck said. "It sounds like a religious quotation."
"And you should know," the Duke said.
Halleck smiled.
"This judge of the change," Leto said, "the Imperial Ecologist, Kynes. Wouldn't he know where those bases are?"
"Sire," Howitt cautioned, "this Kynes is an Imperial servant."
"And he's a long way from the Emperor," Leto said. "I want those bases. They'd be loaded with materials we could salvage and use for repair of our working equipment."
"Sire," Howitt said, "those bases are still legally His Majesty's fief."
"The weather here's savage enough to destroy anything," the Duke said. "We can always blame the weather. Get this Kynes and at least find out if the bases exist."
"'Twere dangerous to commandeer them," Howitt said.